Something magic happens every time you go. You make the magic happen, the magic of Orioles baseball. When the game is close and the O's are hot, there's a thundering roar from 34 to give it all they've got. And you never know.
As you've heard, the Baltimore Orioles began their 60th anniversary season at Camden Yards yesterday by beating the reigning world champion Boston Red Sox 2-1. A Naval Academy football player collapsed at practice and died a few days later. Ravens running back Ray Rice got married last week, a day after he was indicted by a grand jury in New Jersey for aggravated assault against the woman who is now his wife. The Lady Terps, led by forward Alyssa Thomas, are one game away from the Final Four, and a regional director of the National Labor Relations Board says that football players at Northwestern University are university employees who have the right to form a union. Hi again, everybody. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. There's lots to talk about this morning in the world of sports. And for insight into all of this, we turn again to Mark Hyman. He's a former contributing editor at Business Week magazine and a former columnist for the Sports Business Journal. He's written for the New York Times, and he's currently on the faculty of George Washington University. He's also the author of several books, the latest of which is called Concussions and Our Kids. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tom.
So the O's, good outing yesterday, close game, really exciting game. They made it interesting. The opening, the starting pitcher, Chris Tillman, had runners on base in every inning, threw more than 100 pitches in five innings. He was working for a living yesterday, but we came out on top, 2-1. What's your take on how the Orioles are going to do this year?
Well, the dream of an undefeated season lives on. We're 1-0. I'm optimistic about this season, and I think most fans until about 2 months ago were extremely worried because the Orioles hadn't really added any players who were impact players, and then there was a flurry of activity here of late, and so that they've added Waldo Jimenez, who is going to be one of their starting pitchers and probably the ace of the staff, I think, before it's all over. And Nelson Cruz yesterday, I think, proved how valuable he's going to be.
Yeah, he gave a nice little welcome swing yesterday. His home run in the seventh inning was the margin of victory.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz played left field. Not supposed to be a very adept outfielder, but made a very nice play in left field and then hit the home run that was decisive. Nelson Cruz has averaged 27 home runs over the last 5 years. So he's going to be a presence in the middle of the lineup and a bat that they really needed. I think he's going to make them a lot better.
Manny Machado, a lot of people concerned about him. He had a terrible injury at the end of last season. He's a young guy, as we all know, especially those of us of a certain age. When you're young, you heal quicker than when you're not so young. But is he going to be able to come back full strength?
Yeah, it's interesting. The infield looked a little bit different yesterday. Machado is on the 15-day disabled list, which I think is a little bit of a setback because the Orioles initially had hoped that he would be available on opening day. And then late in spring training, I mean, he never played in spring training. He was running in spring training, and apparently, his knee was not feeling the way it should, so that set him back a bit. And I think it's, yet to be determined when he's going to be able to get in the lineup. If he's available in 2 weeks and can, very quickly get back in the groove, I think it's fine. But if we get into, late May or June and he's still not the Manny Machado of last season, then obviously that's a problem for the Orioles. Ryan Flaherty, I think, will be, a very good defensive replacement for Machado, but he's not going to hit the way Manny hit last season, for
sure. Ryan Flaherty, a second baseman, normally moved over to third base yesterday, and Jonathan Shoup stepped in at second base. I guess when Machado comes back, then Flaherty and Shoup fight it out for that position.
Yeah, that's a difficult name to pronounce. It's Scope. Ah, Jonathan Scope.
That's right.
But that's a very tough one.
I forgot, but when you look at it, because it's spelled S-C-H-O-O-P.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are going to be mispronouncing that name for a while, but he's a very fine player. He's only 23, and this will be his first season in the bigs, although he came up a little bit in September and made a very positive impression. But that's a big change. I mean, we've been looking at Brian Roberts or hoping that Brian Roberts would return to second base for the last 10 or 12 years. And Jonathan Scope, I think, has the potential to be a Brian Roberts-type player. shown surprising power and has played well defensively to the extent that we've seen him. But so it's a new look infield.
Mm-hmm. Of course, if we see Brian Roberts this year, it'll be in a Yankees uniform.
Exactly. That something. Will be strange.
Very sad series of events at the Naval Academy. They've lost three midshipmen in the last few months. One of them is Will McCamey, who died at the age of 19. He had an accident in practice, a football player. You've written a lot about head injuries. Your latest book is called Concussions and Our Kids. This is a very sad story, but indicative.
You know, head trauma in football is a problem at all levels. We've heard a lot about it in regard to the NFL. And in fact, there are more than 4,000 former NFL players who have sued the NFL, alleging that they have early onset dementia and other issues related to repetitive head trauma over many years. But it's also a problem at the college level and at the high school level. There are, on average, 6 fatalities a year that are attributed to head trauma in football at the high school and college level. So this is not something that's new. The real story here is that there are ways to reduce head trauma other than eliminating football or creating rules that take the football out of football. You know, most head trauma occurs in football during practices. Teams, particularly at the high school level, there are lots of teams that are holding contact drills 3 and 4 days a week, having nothing to do with the games. And so I think there's increasing awareness that the rules have to change in terms of how teams practice. Now, in this case at the Naval Academy, it's not clear that the player who died actually was injured as a result of contact. In fact, the stories that I've read indicate that there was no contact. So I don't know that we're talking specifically about these circumstances, but generally, I think there's a growing awareness that contact has to be reduced. We have to change or modify the rules during the games, but also reduce the number of drills that result in players banging their heads in practice.
Yeah, and this young man had a similar injury as a senior in high school. His dad was the high school football coach. Obviously, he made the decision to continue to play and kept having problems that ended up being tragic.
Yeah. It's a terrible issue. One of the problems is that players generally do not want to acknowledge that they have symptoms of concussion because they don't want to come out of games. This is particularly true in high school where players, young people don't understand the potential consequences of playing through concussion symptoms. And there's been a lot of education. There are now state laws that require coaches to be more vigilant in questioning players and getting them out of games if they're hurt.
Now, as I mentioned, he's one of three midshipmen who've died in the last few months. We should make clear that the other two did not die having anything to do with football. One was in a skateboarding accident, the other in a car accident. But, our hearts go out to the folks at the Academy
and their
families. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Mark Hyman. We're talking sports. Ray Rice, star running back for the Baltimore Ravens, had quite a week last week. He was indicted by a grand jury in New Jersey for aggravated assault against his then fiance Janae Palmer. On the next day, he and Ms. Palmer were married. Domestic violence, of course, occurs all the time in situations that are much less high profile than this. But setting aside the huge problem of domestic violence and the Rice's family problems. What sort of problems does this create for the team, for the people who pay Mr. Rice to be a sponsor, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that's not well appreciated by people who follow the team. But an incident like this really does reverberate out. There are lots of people who are depending on Ray Rice and who rely on Ray Rice's great reputation in the community. And of players like him. For instance, the team, the Ravens take pride in being good corporate citizens and being involved in charitable endeavors and so forth. And it's a setback for the team when one of their marquee players is portrayed in this way or behaves in this way. It's the allegations at this time, but still. So the team, I'm sure, is, you know, strategizing and attempting to figure out how they can distance themselves, at least from this behavior, although they're talking about Ray Rice as a member of the team for next season. And sponsors, of course, also are affected by this. I mean, Ray Rice has been a very prominent spokesperson for a local bank. And I'm sure that the bank has invested, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in ad campaigns, billboards, commercials built around Ray Rice. You know, they've aligned their brand with the Ray Rice brand, and this is very damaging. And it's a lesson in how volatile and how risky it is for companies to build ad campaigns around professional athletes, because unfortunately, this is not an unusual event.
No, not at all. Of course, Ray Lewis, the famed recently retired linebacker for the Ravens, had his run-ins with the law. By the time that his career was over, people seemed to have, you know, sort of forgotten about that phase of his career. Do you have a sense that Mr. Rice will be able to put this behind him? I mean, both he and his wife have said they do not want the prosecution. Obviously, he doesn't, but even Ms. Palmer says that she does not want the prosecution to proceed. She will not act as a witness against him, obviously. Is he going to be able to clean up his act and move forward?
It's this case is difficult for a lot of reasons. First of all, the allegations are very serious and I think resonate with most people. Domestic violence is a very serious issue. And then you have some videotape that people are watching on the web. It's just under a minute, and it shows Ray Rice and his now wife leaving an elevator, and she appears to be unconscious, and he appears to be dragging her out of the elevator. It's not very flattering. Maybe he can recover from this, but I think the nature of the charges are so serious that it's going to be a long time.
Well, at the very least, let's hope that he's learned something from this and he can move on and make better decisions. The Lady Terps, the University of Maryland women's basketball team, is poised to get into the Final Four. They have a game against Louisville tonight. They won the tournament a few years ago. Alyssa Thomas seems to be the name that nobody knows, whom everybody should know. She is the leading scorer in the history of the University of Maryland basketball for men and women. Has been named the ACC Player of the Year more times than any man or woman. She's really a phenom. Now, as a woman playing professional basketball, she will graduate this year and supposedly move on to the WNBA. Does she have a chance to make a really good living doing that?
Not really. The WNBA is the most successful women's professional sports league in the United States by far. It's probably 15, 20 years old, but it's not a profitable league. It exists because the National Basketball Association basically is underwriting it, and the NBA owns the WNBA essentially, and they share a lot of administrative staff and so forth. But women's basketball, these women are fantastic athletes and they're competing at the highest level. But the reality is that women's basketball is still not paying its way. And it's really a shame because the game itself has come so far in the last 15 or 20 years. And, now we're watching the NCAA Final Four, on national television, but the pro game is still struggling in a lot of ways.
Well, Mark, we're out of time, so we can't talk about the NLRB decision concerning unionization of football players at Northwestern, but we will talk about that the next time. That's an interesting story, and that's one that's years in the making. So we look forward to the next time. Appreciate it, Mark.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
Mark Hyman teaches sports management at George Washington University. His latest book is called Concussions and Our Kids. We've got a link to more information on our website. Come to wypr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cass. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.